Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
In business, everyone doesn't have to do what you tell them to do. Dave, I got this book, and it's all you. The customer is who you are prioritizing. I need to know what your motivations are for doing. You have a lot of people that get together, totally different goals in life, totally different direction. You have to work with their strengths and help them overcome their weaknesses. You know, you put 12 Tom Brady's on the field and it's not going
to
work.
What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
If how you got to where you are isn't helping you become more successful, then you just wasted a whole lot of time.
What's going on, Dave? I appreciate you for coming on to Failure's Knowledge Podcast. I just have a random question. Why yes. Red Box Plus dumpsters?
Well, thanks for having me on. Appreciate the opportunity, Carol. So it's a long story. As I kind of mentioned, I started out 35 years ago as an engineer. And as I went through my career of working in engineering and quality, manufacturing, in the automotive industry, I wanted to get into a different role. So after 14, 15 years of that, I got into automobile sales and spent 21 years currently still kind of doing that. But we got bought out about 18 years ago. We went from being a company that was owned by a family to one that was owned by a corporation, and a totally different direction, different culture, different ability to use my skills and my background. And I said, you know, I need to find something where I can kind of bring it all together. So had some requirements for a business, said it needed to be low HR. So not a lot of people to worry about. I managed, you know, many people in the past. Had to have actual physical brick and mortar type things. So tangible assets. Needed to have some barriers to entry. And I didn't have any, you know, programming or any kind of crazy, you know, skills or talents that couldn't be duplicated by someone else. So it needed to be something that couldn't be outsourced. So I looked at some of the things, and one of the things that came up, I got a call from a recruiter and decided to take the call. He said, what are you looking for? And I kind of told him, he said, I might have something. And that was, almost 3 years ago. So 3 years ago, we had the first conversation, and that's when I decided to kind of go for it. And 18 months later, we were operating, and now we've been operating for a year and a half. So
I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but when I was serving in the Marine Corps, the whole aspect of not having as much time to do what you like to do, not necessarily figuring out what I need to do in order for me to be prepared for today. But I was using the time that I had, and it was a struggle because I was in the service, I was in the Marine Corps. I can't necessarily control my time.
Right.
How do you control the time that you have to grow your business to where is it today?
There was a couple of different elements to it. In the beginning, most of the things I was doing were on the computer, on my own time. I had to submit a business plan. I had to submit financials. Those things I could do, whenever I had free time, you know, not when I'm working in the retail environment. The other element was, because I've been in the car business so long and I have great clients, and a lot of them are very successful, when I told them what I was up to, they offered to help, to use me, to invest, which was rewarding on a number of levels. So that allowed me to kind of leverage the relationships that I had in, you know, in a positive way to help my business get off the ground before we even opened. So I didn't have to spend as much time cultivating the sales and the business as a lot of other people would have if they came in with no network and no people and no, you know, and also the limited time.
That's interesting because you just said something that's really important. Relationships are so important. So now that I'm learning the importance of relationship and I'm communicating with other people and I'm starting to speak out and meet new people. At first, when I started this journey a half a decade ago, when I was back in the service, I didn't understand the importance of relationships. Yes, I can meet people. Yes, I can communicate with people. Yes, I can hear people out. But the importance of relationship, I did not understand. When you were, you said engineer. When you was doing your engineering and then you went into the retail space, how did you understand the importance of relationships?
So like when you talk about being in the Marines, there's a structure, right? There's a hierarchy. So it's not necessarily relationships, it's rank, correct? It's your rank, it's your direction. Business has a lot of the same things, but unlike it being, I don't want to say this, unlike in the military where it's kind of obligatory, when you're there, you got to do what they tell you to do. In business, everyone doesn't have to do what you tell them to do. It's not as much hierarchy. It's not as much rank. Even if you tell an employee, sometimes there's pushback, sometimes there's things, but you're dealing with other people at your same level and above your level, that really the relationship comes down to getting things done, you know, for mutual benefit. And sometimes it's just for their benefit. They need a favor. Sometimes just for my benefit, you need a favor, but that relationship allows you to put enough deposits in their bank and their deposits in your bank, so that when the time comes, it doesn't feel like there's someone's being taken advantage.
Okay.
So it's kind of an ongoing win-win trust-based relationship where people are getting out what they put in, you know, and getting in what they put out. So that's kind of how it worked. Now in engineering, a lot of processes, a lot of things that are, you know, for lack of a better term, mechanical. You know, there's mechanical systems, they operate a certain way. Things go wrong, you have tools that you can use to solve those problems, right? There's Six Sigma, there's defined element analysis, there's a bunch of engineering tools that exist that I learned, in great detail when I was an engineer at Ford and in subsequent roles that then I had to apply. So when I got into car sales, I had all these mechanical tools, and I'd had some relationships in business, but I wasn't selling. You know, I wasn't dealing with the objective, or I was dealing with the objective. I wasn't dealing with the subjective matter to help people figure out something to do that wasn't, you know, buying a new car, especially, you know, where I am at Land Rover Tampa. Buying a vehicle is not a necessity. Nobody comes into Land Rover and says, I need a ride to work. You know, that's not the same. You know, it's not a requirement for transportation. Okay. It's more than that. So it's on a different level. There's a lot of subjectivity to it. So for me to be trusted as an expert in, let's say in process engineering on a manufacturing line, the person who's looking to buy a car doesn't care about that. You know, so all those tools, all those skills, all that knowledge I had, tell them how an engine works, tell them, you know, materials and things like that. That's all great, but it doesn't say, oh, I'm going to buy a car from that guy because he knows how an engine works. You know, so that was one of the challenges, was converting all of that objective material into some use for a subjective, engagement.
As I was reading your articles that you wrote on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. I'm on 3 out of 27. I don't know if you wrote more, but I'm on 3 out of 27. Every morning I get up.
Appreciate that.
And everyone, I like how I looked at the date of the last two. One was in 2023, the other one was in 2024. And I was like, oh, the importance of consistency. And as I'm reading the second article that I read, it has something about Star Wars in it. And as I
Yes.
continue to read it down towards the end of it, I saw a book named Gold Giver.
Yes.
When we met at Land Rover, in which I was coming to look at the car, I was looking and was communicating with you. You referenced that book, and when I saw that book, I said, "Oh, okay." I didn't even recognize that was a sales book.
Yes.
Was it difficult for you to translate the technical work and to understand the people's needs?
Initially, it was because you're looking for levers and dials and things to turn that you can figure out. And I did that to a certain degree for my own targeting and my own projections and things to try and put some ability to measure the sales process in place so that I know where to improve. You know, to kind of get that kind of inflection point of what's going to make the most difference, those leverage points for me and how I do things. But the Go-Giver, so I had a client, and he'd been a client for a number of years at that point. And like with all my clients, he would need something and he'd call me, and I would pick up and be on it and take care of him, even though it wasn't necessarily going to lead to a sale. You know, that day, that month, or that year. You know, it was an investment in the relationship that I referenced earlier. So he said, "Dave, I got this book, and it's all you. And I think you would really enjoy it because I think it really describes how you go about your business." So that was how I got introduced to that book. So he gave me the CD actually. So I listened to it. Many times, and during times when I feel like I'm having a slump. And now, as I get older, as I've been through, you know, what might be 1,000 slumps, because it's a, you know, if you get a performance review every day sometimes, I will revert back to that, and because I now have it downloaded on my phone, and I'll read it, and just to get my mindset back into ensuring that I'm kind of following my purpose.
The third article that I read today, you just really explained like the what was it, plan, do,
Check, act.
act. Yep, and then I said, oh, that, and then the way you break it down, you explain it so well, and as I'm reading, I'm like, the book came to my mind, and then it's not even about just selling is really providing value to people, and then eventually you can help them with a problem that they're solving or a problem that they're facing. Yeah, my biggest challenge in sales was that I always thought sales was like gimmick or it was a hidden agenda or whatever the case is. But then I'm like, dang, when you get to learn more about what you're doing, of course, there's a process behind everything. But the way you carry yourself is that you focus on the problem. You see the people, you understand the people. You read that book, and as you continue to read the book, do you see any differences inside the book than what you're doing every day?
I think you know, when you go back to my business, right, and the second rule of stratospheric success in the book is that the more that you want to earn, basically, the more people you need to serve. Okay. And when you're doing that in a retail business, even though I have lots of clients, I'm pretty much with one at a time, right? And so I don't have this, you know, this product that I can stamp out and send to a million people at once. Okay. So in order to become more successful, you really need to be in a position where you aren't necessarily the one providing the end product, you know, that transaction, that there are multiple people doing it multiple times on your behalf. Because you only have so much time in the day. You only have so many years in your life, and you need other people to be able to help you do that. So that's why another reason why I did the dumpster business, because you know, we have 65 dumpsters. They're out in the community. My guys are awesome. They deliver them, you know, customers call, they pick them up when they're ready. We pick up the phone. If they need us to do something unique, we do our best to help them solve their problem, same way it is in the car business. And to them, that's a very novel thing. You know, they're like, nobody ever does that. Nobody picks up the phone. Nobody, you know, offers to help and do these other kinds of things. So we're providing value that makes our prices seem much less relative to what they're receiving. Okay, so we're providing things of value that exceed the price that they feel they're paying. And as long as you do that, you're not negotiating on price. You're not paying people to like you. You're not doing all the things that they do in the car business because they have a deficiency of providing value, whether it's the waiting, whether it's the approach, whether it's the mentality and the culture. You know, what you thought sales was all about was still what it's about for many people. And when a customer encounters that, they can sense a hidden agenda. They can sense desperation. They can sense a lack of authenticity, right? And when you say, I can have do all those things that make it feel great to put my head on the pillow at night and look in the mirror, you realize you can get to the same goal that you're trying to achieve. You just have to have faith that doing the right things is going to get you there. Not only as well as you could have the other way, but it becomes more sustainable.
Okay. Well, one thing that I've learned, not only by being in school and going from the military to transition out from my hometown back to, from San Diego back to my hometown back to here in Tampa, my hometown is Little Rock, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. There's things and traits that we take with us. There's lessons that is going to always stay with us regardless of how old we get, where we go, and the places that we live. As mm-hmm. you were an engineer, then you went into the retail space, and then you have your own business as right. far as the box plus dumpster. Did I say that right?
Red box plus, yeah.
Okay. Red box plus dumpster. Thank you. Right. Thank you for correcting me. Is there anything that you are bringing from one industry to the next that is the same for all industries?
Yeah, it is that putting the customer's interests first. Okay, that's the same no matter what. So at Ford, when I started in engineering, I started out in more of a technical engine transmission, engine calibration, powertrain, things like that. And then I moved into total vehicle, moved into quality, reliability, testing, statistics analysis, things like that. And then I moved into total vehicle quality, which became a lot softer side of the business, because now you're trying to take what customers say about your product and convert it into things that engineers can get their hands on and do something with. You know, oh, great, they want this. I can change this setting, right? I can change the system. And now it works the way the customer wants, okay? And some of those things are clear and some of them are not. You know, somebody says, oh, the car is too fast. Somebody says, oh, the car is not fast enough. The company says the car brakes too hard. Someone says it brakes too soft. So there's a lot of kind of benchmarking and intangible elements to that. So when I got into that area of quality, you know, the customer is who you are prioritizing. Okay. So, but I didn't know that was going to be on a retail level, you know, at that time. I didn't know. I knew it was going to happen one day. I thought it was going to happen when I was 70. You know, my wife kicks me out of the house, go do something. So I put her on the lot and sell some cars and be a, you know, crusty old guy on the parking lot. And did it at 35. I said, all right, I'm ready to do it now because I think that I want to be in charge of my own destiny. I want to be in charge of my own earnings. Hadn't read The Go Giver to know that that was going to be a one-on-one arrangement for the earnings. So it became a lot of hours. And when you like it, when you enjoy it, it doesn't feel like work. You know? So part of me starting the business was when it started to feel like work. So that's when, you know, kind of pulled everything together and said, all right, now how do we take all of this stuff and turn it into something else?
Okay. So I want to go off script just a little bit. And the reason I'm going off script is because, one, you just brought it up and how your experience not only tied into one industry, you're literally carrying everything that you're doing and just getting better with time. Mm-hmm. So I want to go off script. And so I want to role play with you.
Okay.
So I come to you and the scenario is, Dave, I'm coming to you. I want to get into the dumpster industry.
Okay.
And I'm working a 9-to-5, but I'm afraid to take that leap of faith for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Let's play that scenario out. What advice would you give me, or how would you like advise me in that situation?
First thing I would ask you is what you asked me. Why the dumpster industry? Right?
Okay.
Say, why are you picking that for yourself versus other things that are out there, right? And then you would go, like we're doing today, and you would tell me why you felt that the dumpster industry is right for you. I had my barriers to entry, brick and mortar, can't be outsourced, low HR, high barriers to entry. Those were my requirements for buying the business. Yours might be totally different. So for me to give you advice, I need to know what your motivations are for doing it.
Let's do it.
All right. So tell me, why would you want to go into the dumpster business?
That is a great question, Dave. I think why I want to go into the dumpster business, looking for, just like you, low barrier, don't have as much time to really hire employees and work with employees, manage employees, and so on and so forth. Something that's not going to really take too much time, but I know I will have to put time into it. It's just not the time plus the labor plus everything else.
Right. So if you are looking to leverage your time, you would need, as an owner, to be somewhat of a hands-off owner.
Mm-hmm.
So based on the amount of time, you have to decide who's going to run the day-to-day, who's going to drive the truck, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to do the bookkeeping? Who's going to provide the various services you need? Where are you going to rent the property to store your items? So there's a lot of considerations that go into it, many of which require money, right? So if your time is valuable, and you want to try and free up time, it costs a lot of money. So I would review. It says, do you know how much a dumpster costs? And you might say,
no,
okay, so a dumpster is between $5,000 and $8,000.
Okay.
So you can get one, two, or three dumpsters, right? You can pay $25,000, $30,000 for those dumpsters. Now you're competing with everybody who can afford $25,000 and is willing to drive the truck themselves and is, you know, and has all the other resources in place. Not just the dumpsters, but the truck. You know how much a truck is? A truck is $200,000 to $250,000. So now you're into the business for between $200,000 and $300,000 to start your own dumpster company with a handful of trucks or a handful of dumpsters and a truck. You can get used trucks, but then who's going to work on it? So you need to, you know, sometimes you can learn, but it's better, like you're doing, to have someone who's doing it and just understand all those things. You might come in and say, great, I've got a rich uncle who's going to give me $1 million and I'm going to start this business. And I got my friend Dave and he's going to tell me about these things. And I got my other friend, Sheila, and she's going to tell me how to do this other thing. And she knows a bookkeeper. So you create that infrastructure before you get started.
Okay. You make it look easy.
Well, this is a franchise. Okay, this is a franchise.
Okay.
So it did cost more than it might have had I done it on my own, but I wasn't reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
You never really want to reinvent the wheel unless you have a wheel that nobody's invented before.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the benefit of doing a franchise. There was a structure in place. I just had to put the Legos, in the spots.
I recently learned about franchise in the, I think I had a, not think, what well, I had a entrepreneurship class, and uh-huh. They explained like the franchise model. And now that I'm at the beginning phase of me starting my podcast business, One, it's a lot of challenges, a lot difficult for, because I have to learn everything. I have to put the puzzles together and so on and so forth, which I don't mind because I'm learning on the go and everything I'm learning is I'm learning a lot faster. Right. On the contrary, the franchise model and how you're able to already buy an existing business. I told Shana the other day, I was like, that my next business I'm getting, I'm not starting from the ground up. I'm going to buy a business and so on and so forth. And so learning the importance of that, how did you understand that you, if you buy into the existing thing that's already there, existing business is there, how do you, how did you recognize that you're removing stress from yourself?
Well, even though it's a franchise, I did not buy an existing one.
What do you mean?
It was not the franchise had multiple locations, but not where I am.
Okay.
There was a franchisee who had a Redbox business in Tampa, mm-hmm. and he did not succeed at it. Okay. Mostly because of the choices he made and how he went about doing things. So they took that away from him, but it left a negative kind of flavor amongst some of the customers in the area of the Redbox Plus dumpster brand. So when I purchased my territories, I made sure to avoid the ones that he was in, kind of left them open so that I could cultivate them over time by establishing a relationship, you know, on our own, a separate name, separate. So I was very focused on doing that. So I did start from scratch, but I had the playbook of the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I had looked at other ones that were established, but mm-hmm. the demographics, the geographics were in areas that I didn't have a network. So that's, you know, I want to buy a franchise in Naples. I don't know anybody in Naples. I know like three people in Naples, you know, that's, and then I have to go 3-4 hours here, 15 minutes from my house. My territory covers my day job. It covers my house. And so I made sure that my territory covers where I live and where I work so that I'm always invested and engaged in the community where we're operating. So that's, I think that's another important thing that I had thought might be a good idea and discovered that, in fact, it was a good idea.
That is a great idea. I did a podcast with a gentleman named Will. Now, he goes by Bill, but his name is William Crawford, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And he said something similar like that. He said that because he was a recruiter, he's a recruiter for his organization, MCS. I forgot what MCS stand for.
Okay.
But he was sharing, he was like, yeah, it's a lot challenging to network when you're in different states, in different locations, in different areas. Whereas if I'm in the same building with you, it's easier to network, which is easy to build that relationship. It's easy to establish that. And when he said that, it gave me a different perspective. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Even though it sounds simple, mm-hmm. it removes the stress trying to be everywhere. We can just be in one particular place.
Right. Well, when you think about college, right? And let's say you go away to college, right? So you go away to college and you learn some skills. And this is what people do. They live in other countries. They come to college in the United States and they take all that knowledge and they go back home where they know the people, where they know the things, where they know the stuff. Okay. Some people stay, right? A lot of people came to Florida. They went to USF. They never left, right? Because they established this was their new home. But in most places, people go elsewhere, they learn their skills, and then they come back home and they try to execute. And that's why you see a lot of graduates here. They went to their Gators, you know, or their Seminoles. You know, that's their jam, you know. So they wanted to stay. You know, they leveraged that network of people that they knew from college or that they shared a college with, and it helped them in their career. They may not have intended it, but you see the difference.
The way you just put that was well put, Dave. You're a great storyteller. I want to inform you of that.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
And also because there's a book called Who Spooked Something. It was about when a black guy was in a small town. He went to like join the CIA. He learned how to be a CIA agent, all the traits, all the secrets, and how to fight, how to protect himself, and so on and so forth. And he took all that information and brought it back home. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. When you learn something, you go back home and then execute everything. And so with Redbox Plus Dumpster, what's been your biggest failure so far?
I would say probably the same failure I've had since the beginning, you know, since I started in retail. It's work-life balance. You know, that's my biggest area of weakness is, you treat something like your own and you work it to the extreme and to the exclusion of your family, your life, your things. Now, fortunately, my wife is a saint. She's, we've been together 30 years. She stuck with me. My kids turned out well. They, they kind of understand me. I wish I would have been there more as they were growing up. In my mind at the time, I'm like, I'm providing for them. Their mom can stay home. We can do this. We can do that. But you always think in the back of your mind, you could have done more. You could have spent more time. You could have done a little differently. So for me, a failure, there's two kinds of failures, right? There's the failure that you can recover from. And there's the failure, the weakness of failure you can't. You know, it's like kryptonite. You know, kryptonite will always be Superman's failure, right? There's not some day where he's going to be immune to kryptonite, okay? So I think everybody has their own kryptonite, right? And everything else you can overcome.
Okay, so with the, because I understand that work-life balance, it is definitely hard to put time towards everything, yourself, your relationship. We don't have kids just yet, but your kids, your career, your future, your business, like there's so many different factors that you have to consider. And all of them need time. Yes. It's more so like, dang, like, am I giving enough time here? Am I giving enough time there? Am I giving enough time just everywhere that I need to give time at? And how did you learn how to work with the failure rather than let the failure work against you?
Sleep less. try to compartmentalize things to the best of my ability. Doesn't work that great. But try and schedule, try and adhere to a schedule. Try to put things, so there's certain things I bowl, and that's Wednesday night during the winter, and that's 3 to 4 hours that are immovable. Okay. I have, I work out Wednesday and Sunday for about an hour, hour and a half. I have a trainer that I work with on each day that keeps me in line. So I'm kind of making sure that I'm not wasting that time, right? Make sure that even if I don't feel like pushing myself, they're going to kick my butt, So it's really saying if you're going to do something, make sure you're as efficient and as effective as possible with what you're doing.
Is that your engineer background speaking? Is that your retail background speaking? Or is that Redbox Plus Nelson speaking?
It's really, we'll call it process optimization. We'll call it time management. It's a little of everything, but I think it started from engineering. You have a process. It has a certain number of resources that go in. It has a certain number of things that it spits out. And you want to make sure the what's in between is as efficient as it can be, and as, cost effective and time effective as it can be. So that's, you start applying that to other things in your life. It's going to work for most things, but then you get to the subjective things, the kids and the stuff, and you really can't measure that. But you got to say, I've got to put this time aside. I got to make sure I go to this event. I want to make sure I take them to Disney on their birthday. You want to make sure that you're there for the important things. So you try to block those off the best you can.
That's interesting. One thing that really stuck out to me, minus your expertise, the way you communicate with your customers, the way you just be there and you're present, was that you said that your daughter was working the same industry that you was working. And when I heard that, I said, wow, that's crazy. Like, yeah. What is it called? It's kind of like you're planting the seed, but then as you're doing the work, as you're doing everything, people and your kids are just watching, and they start doing what you are doing. When she
So.
started to be in the same industry that you were in, how did that give you motivation?
Well, for her, it was really part-time. So with my kids and with some of my customers and customers' children, if they're looking for a job with something, I try to, because I know people, I try to help match them up. So with my daughter, she was looking for something she could do in the evenings because she has a grandson. And being a receptionist at the dealer was pretty easy. I don't think she's going to continue on with that. She's got her degree in environmental biology, so she'll be probably going on to something else when the time presents itself. But having her, well, when she grew up with us, we had our events. So we had Breakfast with Santa. It's an event we have every first Saturday of every December. So she went there. She would go sit on Santa's lap, do the face painting, do all the stuff we did for her whole life, so that's where she was very comfortable with that environment. That's where daddy works. That's, so she's okay with that. She's familiar with it. So it was pretty easy as far as places to go for a part-time gig to do that. My son, he's an engineer. I was an engineer. Obviously, he said, "Oh, my dad's an engineer. I should be one too." So that's what he. So he has mechanical engineering from USF. Then my third one, my youngest, she's in college, so we don't know where she's gonna end up. But it's good to see that they either followed in my footsteps or hung around me, because I couldn't stand to be in the same building with my dad. That would be a problem. Or I don't want to do anything he did. That would be a problem too. So it means I didn't screw up completely. So it wasn't full kryptonite.
You're doing good. So what is so you've been married for 30 years, 30 plus years, and of course it ties into the work-life balance as well. So how do you make time for you and your wife throughout the entire 30 years?
I've been gone so long that I think if I were home more, she'd probably be really kick me out, if you look, I had enough of you. That's enough of that. So it's we have specific times set out. Every other Sunday we go out to dinner. So, and then the alternating ones we go out with the kids and the grandson and participate. So that was something we learned was important, because we weren't together every night having dinner, but this way once a week we are. So that's what we do as a family. We alternate with us as a couple. So we have our date night every other week. That's important. And but like with customers, when you start off understanding each other's needs and you understand each other's goals, doesn't mean you don't drive each other crazy, but when you agree on the big things, it takes care of the rest, take care of itself. Okay. You have a lot of people, they get together, totally different goals in life, totally different direction. Her father, my wife's father, was a little more traditional. Her mom stayed at home, dad was traditional. So that kind of arrangement was okay for her. She worked for 10, 15 years before we got married later, 10 or 15 years before we had our child. So before we got married and had our son. So she didn't feel like she didn't get a chance to experience a career and your education and so forth. So that helped. If she said, "I want to be I want to be out there pursuing my career," it may have gone in a different direction, But when we had our child, we decided mutually it was okay with her. It was scary for me, and said, "Okay, I'm it. Thank you're it." But we made it, we made it work. So that helped a lot. So on every level, we seem to agree on the big things.
Okay, for red box plus dumpsters, it seemed like that you're able to adjust quickly and adapt quickly, and not let what's going on around you stop the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Is that because you have a better understanding of where you are going, or you focus on today so you can get to where you are going?
There's a little bit of the urgency and the important that you try to keep an eye on. But if you have a plan, okay. So for my sales, for my own, for the cars, for Land Rovers, I have a plan. I show you what that looked like, and it's basically a spreadsheet, and it says where I expect to be at a certain point in time. So I don't need to worry about figuring out where I'm supposed to be at any point in time. I know exactly where I am at every point in time. So now I'm just moving along that timeline, achieving, doing the best that I can in that moment, knowing where it's going to put me. So what's a business? I have a business plan. I have a growth goal. And I don't have to recreate that and say, oh, where am I? Am I going to have enough to pay my bills? Or, you can't be surprised every time you have a performance review, right? Most salespeople, they go into their monthly review. They have no idea what their closing percentage is. They have no idea how many opportunities they have. They have no idea where they are year to date. They have absolutely no idea of any of that. Okay. When I go into my performance reviews, my management isn't reviewing my performance. I'm reviewing my performance with my manager. And that's what makes you an individual who's in a position to run a business versus not.
Okay. Wow. That was now. Okay. Looking at when you showed me the what is it called? Your when you pulled up your first customer and then you showed me like you have it from year. I'll say it's crazy. And I like how you just said that they're not looking at my performance. We're looking at it together because you're intentional. You're looking at the notes. You're looking at the closing percentage. You're looking at everything. And it makes sense of why you think the way you do, because you're tracking and documenting everything.
So it's not a surprise, right? You don't, that's one, surprises are not good when it comes to your own success, right? You don't want to be surprised. You want to be happy, right? You want to be appreciative. You want to stay humble. You want to be, you want to feel good about yourself and be able to celebrate the victories, but you don't want it to be a surprise. If you do all the right things, you should get the right results. You don't always get the right results, but if you do all the right things and you get the right results, it shouldn't be a surprise, right? You should be happy that it worked. You should appreciate that the monkey wrench didn't come in and screw things up, right? Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you said, when you're intentional, right? So that's where I felt I could run my own thing, where I was in charge of my own performance. I wasn't letting the organization dictate to me.
Okay. I know experience at times, it's completely different. However, your expertise and the way you show me that and the way you just said that your success should not be a surprise, you should not be surprised by what's happening. When you started to track your numbers, did you see the difference in your performance?
I didn't track them to observe. I tracked them to optimize. Right? So in the beginning, I tracked them to set a baseline. Okay? Mm-hmm. But at that point, it's easy. How many cars did I sell over this period of time, right? How much did I earn based on that number of sales? And hadn't started looking at repeats and referrals and things like that. I had some, but hadn't measured them, didn't quantify it at that point. As I went to the next years, 2000, actually, it was actually within a year. I said, okay, now I got my baseline. Let me come up with a system to identify all the things that went into creating the results I've already had, right? Mm-hmm. And where are the important things that I believe I can improve upon, and how much do I think they're worth? So I try to optimize each step to improve the output. Okay. So if you look at any process, and I talked about the goal, which I think you're going to read, theory of constraints, you know, in any process or system, there's some element that is like a gate that a certain number of things can go through, that when that gate is open, stuff happens. When that gate is closed, stuff doesn't happen. And the hole is made larger, you're going to have more output, and the hole is made smaller, you're going to have smaller. That's your kind of critical thing. In selling, there are multiple critical things based on what kind of client you have, the source of the client, you know, the nature of your interaction, things like that. So I identified what I needed to do for each, and then where I felt that I could do better, and I weighted them, and it came together, and I said I should sell 13% more vehicles next year because I'm improving these things on my weighting, and it happened to come together, right? So I did it again, and I did it again, and, you know, so I kept doing it, and the system worked. So I applied it to the whole organization. I was able to predict for the 8 franchises how many vehicles we would sell in a year, and I was within like 3 cars. So they hired me. They, you know, they paid me to do the projections and things and stuff like that too. So I didn't get to optimize it. They just asked me to predict it. So and it was like my answer, but at least they knew I was telling them the truth. So. Anyway, so that's, you know, observing is great, but if you're not going to do anything with it, right, you might as well just be, you might as well have an aquarium, right? Watch the fish, right?
You just look around. Oh! That's crazy.
I mean, really, though, what's the difference if you're not going to do anything with it?
That's valid. In order for you to optimize it, you have to look at every the one that you spoke about, the football one, and you said offense, defense, or the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and so on and so forth. Because I played linebacker in high school, every position on the team has a certain role and responsibility.
Right.
And when you broke it down, you had different categories. And I'm reading everything out, and you the way you explained it, and not only football terminology, but sales terminology, I'm understanding more of why, like, optimization is so important.
Well, every team, you know, if you gave a lot of sales managers an option, they'd hire all quarterbacks, right?
Mm-hmm.
They would. We want all the people that can do all of these things, and they can lead a team. Well, you put 12 Tom Brady's on the field, and it's not going to work, you know? Right, you need someone to go and catch a pass. You need someone to, you know, tackle the guy on the other team with the ball. You need someone to kick it through the uprights. Right, so you have to identify the team members and not only make sure that they round out the team, but that you understand how they operate. Because you can't put the wide receiver in the same drills that your offensive tackle is in.
That's valid.
But that's what happens in every organization every day. We're going to do sales training. Everybody needs to go, right? We're going to have these KPIs, these key process indicators to determine what you're supposed to be doing every day, all right? You got to make 30 calls a day. Doesn't matter whether it's your first day. Doesn't matter that. Doesn't matter what the calls are. Doesn't matter what it is. Everything is worth one, and everybody needs to get to 50, okay? That's how these organizations are run. So if they have no idea that the team is comprised of the personalities and skills that they need, they're not leveraging that, everybody's the same.
And in order for you to have a optimized team or efficient team, you have to learn individually, or you have to learn them individually and then work with, or am I, yeah. Well, work with their strengths or?
Yeah, you have to work with their strengths and help them overcome their weaknesses. And if you want to divide it into the type of person they are, then you can have subgroups, right? All right, we're going to put our quarterbacks together, right? We got a couple quarterbacks here. They're going to be able to run the show on their own. They don't need to do the same things. They don't. Their drills and their training is going to be a lot different than the rookie running back. Okay. So you say, okay, we're going to take our rookie running backs, we're going to train them in a different way. Okay. So I don't understand is if knowing what I need to do to be successful on a personal level needs to be unique to my strengths, my weaknesses, my approach. How can you take a team and decide that all that you can improve them collectively with the same rewards, recognition, structure, training, things like that? So that's the biggest weakness. That's once again why I started my own business, because that ability, that empowerment to sell and do things how I had optimized them for 18 years to be successful was now no longer important, right? It was, you're just like everybody else. And that's the way big corporations run. It's not say, oh, it's a big, bad corporation, they're terrible people. They're not. It's just their model for what a salesperson is a much more compartmentalized version of an employee than I want to be.
That's mind blowing, because you also gave the article I read today was the Deming's 14.
Yep, Deming's the Plan Do Check Act, and he was the quality expert who went to Japan, and he was kind of shunned in the United States. If you read his read book Out of the Crisis is the book he wrote, and so he was shunned by the United States. And this was after World War II. And he went to Japan and helped them become the leaders in the automotive world that they became. And then he came back to the United States to help the United States catch up, right? Because he helped them surpass, and then he helped the United States catch up. So some of his main points are that basically 85% of the problems are due to management, not the employee. And he talked about the risks of slogans and sayings and things to try and drive quality and behavior. He said it's got to be in the process. It's got to be things that can't be left to chance, you know. So it was interesting what he said you need to put into place. It's 14 points. Consistency of purpose to stay in business, to provide jobs, you know. So he had there's a lot of good points in there that you look at as a business owner, you understand those going in, and I think you'd be a little better off than if you're winning.
I'm gonna have to study that a little bit more, because I was in operations management, now I'm in managing diversity. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm gonna have to study that more in depth, because when I read your article today and you broke it down, I said, God, no, there's a lot more information that I need to keep studying.
Well, and it's good. It's good stuff. And I put it out there. I think it's good stuff. And I put it out there in the hopes that other people will see it. People in sales, and say, oh, I can do this within the confines of my own corporation or my own organization to basically run the little sales activity like it's their own business, which is what the first thing he told me when I went into sales was, run it like it's your own business. Treat it like it's your own business. And I said, okay, I'm going to do that. So I've been treating my car sales activity like it's my own business for the last 21 years. So that's, it should be that way with everything, right? I don't care what you're doing. If you treat it like your own business, you're going to take a different approach than if you think it's all somebody else's, right? Mm-hmm. That's somebody else's job. Somebody else has to take care of that. I'm not going to pick up that piece of paper on the floor. I'm not going to care if that car is dirty in the showroom. You know, these kind of things.
That's interesting. Okay. Dave, this has been great. This has been great. I have one last segment, and it's called Best for Last. It's mm-hmm. when I ask four questions fast, and you give like a 30-second response with it. You ready?
Yes.
So first question is, what are you grateful for?
My wife, my kids, my optimism, and my resilience.
Okay. Okay, what do you regret?
So the work-life balance, not spending enough time with friends and family and things like that. You know, kind of not putting those at the priority that I would like to.
Okay. Okay. Do you have, what is your biggest regret? No, I'm sorry, not biggest regret. What is your biggest lesson while being the owner of, or being in franchise business of Redbox Plus Dumpsters?
Biggest
lesson.
Biggest lesson. Defer to the experts. Don't try and listen. Don't try and reinvent the wheel. Be aggressive with where you're going, but not necessarily with the people who are helping you.
That is a great lesson. And then last and favorite question, what does failure is knowledge mean to you?
That was the hard one. Like I said, there's two types of failure. There's the failures that you're never going to overcome. So, avoid the kryptonite, right? And there's the failures that you're going to push through, be resilient, be optimistic, and get outside of your comfort zone. Take all of the things that you've learned so far and use those, kind of like push you over the top, okay? So if you don't, everything that happened before should be like gas in the engine, should be more horsepower, should be improving, like moving back to a place that you're familiar with, or starting a business in a place where you're familiar with, is using that background, using the experience, the history, your life to help you become more successful, So if it's not, if how you got to where you are isn't helping you become more successful, then you just wasted a whole lot of time.
That was a great point. That was well put. How can people learn more about you? How can they work with your company? How can they work with you? And how can they just follow you in everything that you're doing?
Check me out on LinkedIn, Dave Friedman. I've got Redbox Plus Dumpsters of Pasco and Northwest Hillsboro. Easy to reach. My phone's there. You can call me anytime. I'll pick up and text you and bring you a dumpster, help you buy a car, whatever you need. So I'm easy to reach and I'm always there.
Appreciate you for coming to the Failure Knowledge Podcast. So I have three questions for you. First one is, what encouraged you to say yes to come on to the podcast?
Well, I think your approach, we'll say the reputation of having interviewed a lot of prominent people in the area, felt it would be nice to be included amongst them. So for me, it felt like an opportunity to get some exposure that way.
Absolutely. And then next question, is there anything that I can work on for the next guest as far as like doing more research and learning more about your story and so on and so forth?
No, you seem to touch on it. I think with our initial meeting in the dealership, I showed you a bunch of stuff that maybe everybody else wouldn't. So however you do your research to get to that point and know those things, I think they're super helpful. So continue to do that.
Okay, I appreciate it. And then last question, if anyone was hesitant to come on to the Failure Knowledge Podcast, what is one piece of advice to help them prepare to come onto the platform?
Just really review some of your life in your brain. So some of the things you didn't necessarily think of, some of the path of how you got to where you got, wasn't something that you had kind of formulated. So allow your brain to do that a little bit. But other than that, just be authentic and go from there.
Hey, this has been great. I appreciate it. Let me stop recording one more time.